Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, valued listener, and welcome to this, the first ever UK Tech Weekly podcast, brought to you by the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK, and Computerworld UK. Each week we'll be gathering in our little radio treehouse to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed discussion on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. We're sponsored by Audio Technica, who are providing the mics on which I can do this. I'm Matt Egan. You weren't expecting me to do that, were you? Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in discussion by the mighty David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
Hello.
The wonderful Charlotte G, Editor of Techworld.
Hi.
And the entirely 100% present Mr. Scott Carey, Online Editor of Computerworld UK.
Hello.
So we're going to start off today, David, by talking about Apple and Error 53.
Yes.
Is this an example of Apple's can't-help-itself horribleness, or is it a storm in a beautifully built but expensive teacup? What's been going on? What's the deal?
I can't really interpret it in terms of your metaphors, but it is very bad. That's how I would say... that's how I would sum it up.
So explain the story.
It's a catastrophic error which has been striking people's iPhones and, in some cases, iPads, and turning them into bricks. It's been bricking them.
And that's good only if you're a builder. It's not.
Of course, it makes it useful for house building, but it seems to be caused by people doing third-party repairs. So they've had other companies repair the Touch ID fingerprint scanner, or in some cases the screen, and then the next time they update their phone, they find that it doesn't work anymore, and it says error 53.
And is a suggestion that this is an intentional thing? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it the case that with your iPhone or iPad, there's something in the warranty or there's something in that Apple tells you in the small print that you shouldn't get a third party to make these repairs?
Yeah, if you get somebody other than an Apple engineer to open up your device and repair it, if you do it yourself, or if you get somebody else, if it's not Apple certified, then that does void your warranty. But they've never said anything about it's destroying effectively your phone. I mean, sure. this is a disaster. It makes it completely unusable. So as far as we can see, it is deliberate, because Apple have made a statement and they've said that this is a security measure. They've said that the iPhone runs a diagnostic check when it's woken up, and it checks that all the components are legit. You know, it's looking out for if some dodgy guy has stolen your phone, and then they've put in their own version of a Touch ID fingerprint sensor, and then they're going to start using it for Apple Pay and things like that, and they're going to start buying stuff on your credit card, which is all, you know, this all makes sense, that it would then go, oh, hang on, something's wrong here, I don't recognize this fingerprint scanner, except that if that's what it's for, then it should just disable the fingerprint scanner.
Sure.
It should stop you using Apple Pay, that's fine, I have no problem with that. But instead, what it's doing is it's bricking the phone, which
right.
is really obviously a measure put in place to stop you saving money on your repairs. They want you to get it repaired by them, which costs a lot more money.
I mean, I should say, in the interests of our lawyers, that we probably can't prove that. But
yes.
But that seems to be a wildly held perception.
Yeah.
And when you say bricking it, what do you mean?
It won't do anything. You know, it will go black. It will not do a thing. And then when you plug it into your in your Mac or your PC, then iTunes will say error 53, so it's
so it really won't work.
No, and people are finding that they can't even get back stuff that was on there, you know, photos and things like that.
Wow. So there's no way of, I mean, do you then go to the Apple store or a licensed Apple retailer and they can fix it?
There's been mixed stories about this. A lot of people say even then they can't. One method that's been suggested is that you reinstall the original components that were replaced.
Right.
Which is...
That sounds like magic, though.
This is just astonishing. Yeah. Well, exactly. But if you had them replaced, they obviously don't work. So yeah. I'll put back in the Touch ID scanner that doesn't work. Brilliant. But at that point, sometimes people are finding that it then runs another diagnostic check and it goes, oh, that's legit, but not working, and then it works again. But other people are finding that doesn't work. What I would do is I would go to Apple and see what they say. But a lot of the geniuses, so-called geniuses, don't even know what this is, don't understand why it's happening, and won't be able to help. So at that point, and again, with one eye on our lawyers, I would be thinking about a class action lawsuit. I would be thinking,
wow,
I would be investigating.
It starts right here.
I know. I would be investigating my options because this is not really on.
Or remarket the names of the geniuses and then
problem solved. Idiots.
Clearly. Apple idiots.
I'm off to the idiot bar.
What do you think is, if they're sort of saying officially that it's security related, but if not that, what do you think might be the real motivation behind it?
Well, I'm
treading gently here.
Yeah, I'm trying as a long-term Apple fan and follower. I'm trying to hold out hope that this is some sort of mistake.
Could be a mistake, yeah.
That what they did is that
they could be well-intentioned.
Yeah, that is it. You know, there isn't communication between two departments at Apple, which is not like them. But somebody's implemented a bit of code in iOS 9 because this was introduced back in iOS 9 in September. This has been around for a long while,
right? And it's only just come into view now, presumably because there's a certain amount of repairs have been required.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that's weird about it, is that unlike every Apple scandal ever, which as soon as it's discovered, it leaps to the top of the news agenda and people love it because it's got the word Apple in it. Mm-hmm. This case, people were reporting on it back in September,
right,
you know, 5 months ago, and it's sort of been on the back burner and it's gradually worked its way up. And now it's a big thing, but I don't understand why it hasn't been bigger than it has.
Right.
I don't understand why Apple hasn't got out in front of this either, because they're normally good at PR, and this is obviously not on.
Because I would say, I mean, speaking back to your point about it being a mistake, it seems unlikely that in order to protect the business of repairs, which is a very lucrative business that Apple's own stores does, and also the licensing fees it gets for people being a licensed Apple reseller, it seems unlikely that for that revenue stream, Apple would deliberately damage.
Well, they know the importance of loyalty and perception, and they're very
so
good.
It's more likely to be a mistake, but as you say, it's unusual that Apple hasn't handled it quicker and better than it has.
Yeah.
Is anybody prepared to defend Apple on this? Does anybody think it's a good thing to have that kind of setup?
I do think that they're always going to protect that revenue stream, and that if they can, you know, make sure that you do get your device repaired properly, then they're going to do everything they can to it. I don't think that goes as far as saying that they've introduced something that categorically punishes you for going to going somewhere like that. Really niche question, but if your phone is bricked, can you still get it recycled when you're exchanging your device? Because they pay loads of money. You know, I recycled my last device.
And, that's a good question.
They're even saying now with a smash screen, they'll recycle them. You're talking about 100 quid off your next phone.
Yeah. You sure, even with a smash screen? Because I heard that if it's damaged, they'll take it. But they're saying not catastrophic.
And bricks is pretty damaged, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd have said that smash screen is fairly catastrophic.
Bricks, the components are still in good nick.
Yeah.
It's just the software's not working.
Yeah.
It also depends on who you recycle it with, because often in that case, the value to the person who's taking it off you in part X, it's a bit like with a car, is that they're getting your business. Mm. And actually, in the case of networks or other manufacturers, if they're getting you either away from Apple or getting you onto their network or keeping you on their network, your value as a customer means they're happy to basically give you 100 quid for free.
Yeah.
And they're saying they're recycling it, but they may not even do that. It's just kind of their value for them. What about, this is an Apple scandal. How are people's general around this table? How are people's general perceptions of Apple, both in terms of its products and its company? David, you're the acting editor of Macworld UK. you love Apple, presumably, but Scott, Charlotte, how do you feel about Apple?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved Apple products. I have had iPhones since, I think, the very first. I had a very original iPod, which I was absolutely in love with, that I used to manually
Original iPod.
Very original. As in the one with the silver back.
Okay. Right.
That was quite heavy.
I have one of those.
Yeah. I loved that thing, and I used to manually reset it on, like, basically a daily basis to keep it running, and it eventually gave up the ghost. But yeah, and I use a MacBook. I've got an iPad Mini. I've got a lot of the products, and I love them. I think their customer service tends to be very good. I find them extremely expensive when things go wrong. That's my main criticism. But yeah, generally all in.
Yeah, I think I'm broadly positive. I mean, I personally, I've only ever owned a few Apple devices. I'm more of an Android phone owner, to be honest, in this weird clash
for the word Android there was
yes
I know Android.
But that's just kind of personal preference, but I think they make beautiful devices. They've got a nice kind of flowing ecosystem, so everything sort of matches up. I think, you know, my parents are both massive Apple fans. I think as a company there's a perception that they potentially, although they're doing very well and sort of I think they just lose top spot of most valuable companies.
Well, debatable. You believe, yeah, because also then apparently the next week they got it back. I mean, the fact is, a company that makes $18 billion in a quarter,
they're doing all right.
Probably doing all
they're
right.
They're doing fine. But then the questions are over their kind of long term strategy. Kind of, are they really being as innovative as they used to be?
So not a fan of the Apple Watch.
I'm wearing a Pebble Time, so I prefer to have a nice open platform watch versus being locked into.
Good to know.
Well, that's an interesting point, because you just described a flowing ecosystem. Mm. One person's flowing ecosystem
is another
person's closed loop, which is not.
Yeah,
not
it's an Oxbow Lake, isn't it?
It's an Oxbow Lake.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Wow. Isn't their office block actually a closed loop? Yeah.
It's an infinite loop.
Infinite loop.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would entirely agree that Apple makes great products and is hugely profitable, but I do think one of the challenges it's got to face, and it's got to face with the biggest wad of cash in history in its pocket, so I think it'll be all right, is that where once the iPhone in particular was miles ahead of everyone else, it's just actually technically not possible to be that far ahead of everyone else now, because just the way components work, and also, and we'll come on to this a bit later on when we talk about licensing and copyrights, there comes a point where when you do something great, other people imitate it. And it's kind of difficult to prevent that. But one of the things I was going to ask you about, David, was we saw over the past couple of weeks, as we've just discussed ourselves, the Apple quarterly results and how that was reported. And if you read a lot of the national newspaper reports here in the UK, you would believe that Apple was about to fall off a cliff.
Yeah, it's this amazing thing, because they've had this cash cow of the iPhone that's been successful to a degree which is essentially unprecedented in corporate history. And Apple has grown increasingly to depend on this, because when they first started doing, you know, music devices and then phones, it was like a niche part of their business. Mm. Now they rely on this. And at some point, it's going to stop going up. Nothing can carry on going up at that degree forever. So people keep looking for just the smallest little incline off. In this case, it's actually higher than ever before. It's still growing. It's just not growing as fast, which is, you know.
Yeah.
This is what it's like with Apple, because anything about Apple is news, and if you think they're about to fail, that's huge news. Yeah. So everybody wants to be the first to notice it.
That's a point in search of evidence, isn't it?
It really is. Exactly.
But back in the day, you would always believe that Apple weren't far away from creating another device that was going to basically just keep the product line rolling. You know, the iPad, there was a lot of people when the iPad came out saying, who needs this? This is completely unnecessary.
They're saying that
tablet
now,
computer. Yeah. But still, so many people own them. Yeah. Really popular device. So you just wonder if that innovation might be drying up.
Yeah, I wonder about that as well. I wonder if that's a perception thing, because there comes a point where a business, an organization is so big that it moves into a new part of its lifetime, which is where Apple is now, which is the making money part of its lifetime. You know, Tim Cook gets a certain amount of abuse for not being Steve Jobs. But actually, fiscally, it's a much more successful organisation under Tim Cook. And that's what Steve Jobs recognised in anointing him his successor. He was the guy who could get you your MacBook tomorrow after you order it today. Mm. And, you know, who knows where that transition will take them. We've seen it with tech giants in the past. IBM no longer makes laptops that people can buy because that was a very unprofitable business, and it's now in its sort of maximum revenue part of its life cycle. Mm. You know, who knows? And I also think the other side of that is the technology argument, which is we've gone through this time of unprecedented hardware change. I'm not sure, Moore's Law notwithstanding, how much further that can go, and actually where we are now. All right, there's a lot of life to be had in the battery life arguments, but really innovation now, as we know from our enterprise websites, is in the kind of cloud area. It's in the third platform. Mm-hmm. Maybe even the fourth and fifth platforms when they come along.
I did go to an event a couple of days ago, and David Rowan, editor of Wired UK, was doing a speech, and it was a really great speech. Lots of like video clips of things like mad technology, and he showed that there's this company, I can't remember where it was from, but basically it's this like huge, great big charger, and you plug in what looks like a massive plug socket into your phone. It was an Android phone. And it charged the entire battery in under a minute.
Right.
And it says it can charge a car in under like 10 minutes. Mm. So I wonder how quickly these things might change.
Yeah.
He also showed a clip of Steve Ballmer laughing raucously on the day that the iPhone was announced, saying that no one
remember
ever
that. Used
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Which I've never said. He said it would get like a 4 or 5% market share, and that the rest would be Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Although he's far from alone. I mean, Larry Ellison with the cloud. Yeah. I mean, he sort of dismissed that. There's a fine pedigree of technologists dismissing rivals' innovations.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so we're all agreed. Apple's doomed. I think it's time to move on to our next subject. Charlotte and Scott, we should explain to the rest of the world, assuming the rest of the world is listening to this, that there is an elected mayor in London.
Yes.
And quite recent thing, though. Quite recent.
And quite an odd position in some ways. I believe it's the largest electorate for a single person in Europe. But the level of power is interesting. Perhaps we'll get into that. But we're currently mid-election season. What's been happening this week, and how does this affect the world of technology?
So Londoners are going to go to the polls on Thursday, the 5th of May.
Lovely journalistic speak. Go to the polls.
So this week, a group called Tech London Advocates came out with a manifesto for tech for the mayoral candidates. So basically policy recommendations that they want them to adopt. And it included things like better broadband, more support for startups in terms of kind of cheaper office space, making it a bit easier to hire people from abroad, you know, outside the EU, which is quite difficult. And there was also this idea that we should get a chief digital officer for City Hall. Currently a bit unclear what that means, whether it means someone who fixes their technology or is outward facing. I don't really know. So for that kind of purpose of debating this, they all got together on Tuesday at Here East, which is a digital campus, as it calls itself, in the former Olympic Park. And the candidates that met, it's probably worth going over who they are. There is Sadiq Khan for Labour, who's currently edged ahead in the polls. There's Zach Goldsmith for the Tories. And there was also Sian Berry for the Greens, Caroline Pidgeon, who's a Lib Dem, and Peter Whittle, who was the UKIPper for the debate.
What about the new feminist party candidate?
Yes, there's also, well, the Women's Equality Party were not invited and were a bit miffed about this, and the lady the ladies, one of their representatives stood up from the floor and said, you know, can the candidates say what they think about getting more women into tech, which is a really, really
very
pressing
valid,
issue. And unfortunately, the chair sort of breezily said, oh, well, we'll come on to that later, I'm sure. Unfortunately, we never did come on to it, so I didn't get to hear what they thought about that. But
you're a huge fan of the chair's general performance on the day, though, weren't you?
Yeah,
so, you know,
yeah. Dimbleby is probably safe. I'll just put it that way. but anyway, to be honest, the debate was, it was interesting to hear what they had to say, but they all made the right kind of noises, and they all said, you know, we support the manifesto. I don't think there was any, really any part of the manifesto they didn't support. The only note of difference was probably the UKIP candidate who said, you know, we should leave the EU, which, funnily enough, didn't go down that well.
Well, they probably
want to
bring back the loom and the
probably, yes. Yes, he sort of quite bizarrely said that we need a sort of tech advocate in schools, which I didn't really understand what that meant.
Could the loom be used for fibre broadband?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think we just invented something.
Yeah.
We made a smart loom, and it's... connected to all the other loom.
An IoT loom, potentially.
So can the mayor affect tech? Does it matter? What? How much influence does City Hall have over technology in London?
I think it's an odd role, really, because the...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
In terms of their powers, they don't really have very many. They can... Yeah.
Transport.
Yeah, transport. I mean, they can't really, in terms of sort of raising and spending tax, they're actually pretty minimal. Yeah. I think they're sort of seen more as a cheerleader for London. It's not purely ceremonial, that wouldn't be fair, but there is a lot of that to the role. So the answer is, I mean, for example, visa rules, I mean, they have literally zero impact. All they can do is lobby the government and say this is affecting
with a large mandate.
I mean, it's not, I'm not to, which isn't to say that isn't a powerful role, it's just they don't directly kind of affect that as much as they might make out.
Sure. What about this? I mean, I'm interested in the whole idea of startups in London. This is something you've looked at a lot, Scott. We hear a lot about Tech City and, you know, Silicon Roundabout. Is that a reality, or is that almost a Charlotte's Point? The mayor, in this case Boris Johnson, you know, doing good PR for the city.
Yeah, at the end of the day, when it comes to that area, the mayor will always make the right noises, but he actually doesn't do a lot of work himself in the area. He lets his promotional body, London and Partners, look after things like that, especially when it comes to attracting talent, tech talent, Tech City. All of these things are about, you know, proving that London is a tech hub. There have been lots of startups coming out. There's a lot of money being invested in London, there's a lot of talent here, and it is competing on sort of the worldwide stage, but at the end of the day, the mayor, again, can only be a cheerleader for that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And interesting that we all have slightly different pronunciations of the word mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Apparently I pronounce a lot of things American, I've been told.
Pronounce them American.
Like, do they even have mayors in?
Almond? They do, they have Mayor of New York, Bloomberg, for example.
Feel embarrassed. Didn't know they're American mayors.
Yes.
It is mayor.
They've got cities and everything.
Yeah, they do. I know.
They're really
doing well over there in America.
And the Canadians have mayors, don't they?
Who was the mayor of Toronto? Yeah.
Yes. He was interesting. He was interesting.
Are we going to get the lawyers involved?
Lawyers may have to get involved in several things. Actually, I was going to raise one point before we move on into whatever we're moving into. There was a really interesting moment in the debate 2 days ago when Zach Goldsmith said that he's not an Uber customer and he thinks that they represent unfair competition presumably because black cabs have to adhere to regulations that Uber doesn't. Mm. And that was very interesting. Sadiq Khan said, the genie's out of the bottle and we've already got a million Londoners signed up to it. But that was actually one of the very few rare moments of difference.
But that is interesting, isn't it? Because that is... And Zach Goldsmith is, you know, quite a prominent politician. He's a scion of a very wealthy family. But also he is from the conservative tradition and literally conservative of a small C. Mm. I would presume that the Hackney cab license owning cab drivers in London actually have quite a big constituency. And I would say that the reality of it is that Uber have Ubered that particular industry and that genie is out of the bottle. And the idea that a politician can legislate against tech, in a sense, which is kind of what he's saying, is completely false. My view would be that, not that I'm saying Uber's brilliant or anything, but that model is actually, far from being anti-competitive, it's entirely competitive. Mm. And it's interesting that nominally, at least, from the right of centre politician would be attempting to protect an industry rather than allowing market forces to...
It must just be political grandstanding there.
You would think so.
Because, as we said, he doesn't have any power over that.
No.
And so he's speaking to... I mean, speaking to the base, to use a sort of American political term.
Oh, now you're American.
Yeah, now I understand it. But, you know, he's a conservative, but he's a very liberal conservative. And you would think that taxi drivers wouldn't ordinarily be inclined... This is a terrible generalisation, but you might think that your taxi driver on the street...
Taxi drivers are always making generalisations.
Well, one of the generalisations they might make is that those people from Eton are all the same, or those environmentalists are all the same. And he is both of those things, but he's also standing up for the taxi drivers. So maybe it's for that reason.
But I think the point I'm making is that it's another occasion in which, and maybe this is a uniquely British thing, but a politician is attempting to understand something that they don't understand, or is attempting to legislate something that they don't understand. It happens all the time. We have successive governments trying to, quote, police the internet using technology.
Shut that thing down, as Trump put it.
That's my favourite.
Shut down the internet. Yeah.
Just shut it down.
Yeah. I mean, I think Goldsmith's kind of couched it in terms of an emotional attachment to black cabs.
Right.
And in terms of sort of feeling sad that you know, they may be under threat. I know it's kind of debatable how far they are. I mean, there is an argument that Uber, rather than replacing black cabs, are increasing the number of journeys people take in taxis. I don't know. There's not very clear data about how much Uber are taking away business.
But isn't it adapt or die anyway? I mean, the fact is that in London we're blessed with extremely good black cabs because they have to do the knowledge. So they know literally every street in a city of 8 to 11 million people, depending on who you believe. And they're licensed and they're legislated and all that stuff. But the value that they add is if you get in a black cab, they know exactly where they're going. Mm. So if the black cabs adapted some of Uber's way of booking and being present everywhere, in much the way that actually a big private hire company like Addison Lee is starting to do, then Uber's competitive advantage starts to slip away and people might choose to go with the black cab because it is a better experience, even if it's slightly more expensive.
Well, they offered, Uber actually said, we're willing to let black cabs use our platform for a year. You know,
they do that in New York.
Yeah.
So in New York, you can flick across and you can see yellow taxis in the area and book them there. And then I think you pay them in cash. So it's not unprecedented. I think we do have to remember that Zach Goldsmith was an extremely radical environmentalist.
Younger
in his career. So the whole... it's got to be politically motivated, because in reality, years ago, he would have just said, we shouldn't be getting taxis, we should be using public transport, we should be cycling.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it's, okay, which one is the least, path of least friction here politically? Yeah. And it's probably just backing the black cabs.
Yeah, and it's not going to decide. I mean, the thing is that it's not really going to be an election decider. I mean, frankly... I mean, even I, who am very interested in the tech sector and follow it, and it's my job, I'm not going to decide who I vote for based on their stance on the tech sector. Because the problem is you can't really kind of section it off into its own bubble. Because in reality, you know, if startups can't afford to live here, or they can't afford to, I don't know, rent office space, then, you know, they're all linked together. You can't really talk about tech as a separate issue.
They're very linked. And actually... talking about rents and stuff like that, it brings another relevant point in, which is that we're talking about a London mayoral election, which I think is of at least vague interest to the rest of the UK. But then we often hear about this idea, again, to go back to you, Scott, about the tech city, about the Silicon Roundabout. But I do wonder whether in PRing London in that way for tech, are we ignoring the fact that there are great tech centres outside of London in the UK?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, Tech North have been sending out some press releases recently saying, you know, don't forget about us. Bath and Bristol.
Yeah, Manchester as well.
Have been talking about all of their success recently in terms of producing startups and innovation and things like that. It definitely is an issue that goes beyond London.
Yeah.
It's easy for these guys to talk about Uber, but Uber is not just in London.
No, of course.
And it definitely goes a lot further, so... It just comes down to the fact that we're in the middle of a, you know, election cycle where the mayoral election is coming up. That's what people want to talk about. And London will always be dominant in terms of tech. It's where a lot of the talent is. It's where they want to be. And that's just the way it is.
But it's also where the highest wages are and the highest rents are. So it's interesting. Yeah. Like, I was speaking to a startup not so long ago who based itself in Birmingham, principally because they felt it was the best combination of talent against cost, and also geographically it meant it was easier for them to reach the rest of the country. I know, Charlotte, you've been all over the place. You were in Aberdeen recently.
Manchester, Aberdeen, I went to Birmingham as well. I went recently for a kind of tech NHS tech conference there. I think absolutely there is a huge amount of talent, and there's very interesting stuff happening outside of London, obviously. I mean, recently I went to William Hill's Accelerator and spoke to the guys who won that. They're called Bet Game, and they're just a couple of blokes who live in Manchester and set up their own company where you can bet on the game of FIFA that you're playing with your friend.
Sure.
Which is quite a fun idea. Any game that you
wish. Esports, though, esports is huge. Maybe not so much with sporting games, but like the actual World of Warcraft esports. ESPN has just made a section on their website for esports, even though John Skipper 2 years ago said that we only cover real sports, we would never cover esports, and he's completely backtracked. So it's a big thing.
But gambling on esports, I think, is really fascinating because gambling currently underpins pretty much all televised sport. That's what pays for it, essentially. Yes. So the idea that you can now gamble on your game of FIFA or Pro Evo or whatever against your mate on the other side of the world is
I was going to do a Ray Winston impression, but I decided against it.
Save it for next week. We'll be able to come back.
Enjoyable.
Okay, I think we've entirely covered the London mayoral debate and London as a tech centre. So we'll move on to our final topic of the day, which is YouTube licensing and the question of whether you can license an idea. This week has seen much wailing and gnashing of teeth after the Fine Brothers attempted to franchise out something called a reaction video. Yes, I have no idea what I'm talking about. First of all, who can tell me what is a reaction video?
Well, it's if I may jump in.
please.
The idea is
correspondent
is
David Price.
I think, am I the... No, you're the oldest, aren't you?
Very much so.
The Fine Brothers show something noteworthy... Usually it's another YouTube video to either a young person or an intriguingly old person. You have to be either one or the other. And then that person reacts. That's all it is. And so you film them being flabbergasted. Basically.
Yes.
Right.
I'd call them flabbergasted videos.
So when the Red Wedding happened on Game of Thrones, and there were all those videos of people losing
reacting
their minds.
Exactly. That kind of thing.
So all those videos aspects of it, I guess, is what's interesting here, because these guys are very successful with this. They've built a business on YouTube. Huge millions of hits and therefore some good revenue, and they this week attempted to sell a franchise in essence of their model, which has caused a huge outcry, presumably because they're not the only people doing reaction
videos. They weren't the first to do it, right? They're sort of the most successful at the moment, which is actually part of the issue, because they are the big dogs, if you like. They are being given this special power by YouTube that they are allowed to arbitrarily take down other people's videos, because they are sort of select users that get so many
Once you get above a certain number of views, you get various perks, one of which is you can sell your own advertising, which makes a huge difference. But the other thing is, Google will then actually start supporting you as a sort of TV channel.
Yeah,
interesting.
So is it a case of YouTube shooting themselves in the foot a little bit?
I think it's the Fine Brothers shooting themselves in the foot.
Okay.
But I mean, isn't it YouTube who set up the rules within which they operate?
They set up the rules about the perks, but it's the Fine Brothers that have stepped in to trademark the idea of React World, they call it, which is ridiculous because they didn't do it first, you know. Right.
I mean, that's such a weird thing. I mean, you can't really kind of copyright something
that would be
like that.
That would be like trying to copyright square corners on a smartphone.
Yeah.
But I should stress that this is trademarking, not copyright.
Trademarking. Gotcha. Right, okay.
Which makes a small difference. Yeah. They have to actively enforce it, I believe.
That is quite strange. So they're kind of constructing barriers to entry for other reaction.
Yeah, they are.
Pretenders.
It goes against everything that YouTube stands for, and they made all these noises about community and how they're all mates with each other, but they're not at all. It's just as hierarchical as any business platform.
In essence, they were trying to make money from a franchise business, and interestingly, the reaction has been overwhelmingly, virtually 100% negative. Which sort of brings me onto a broader topic, which is how does copyright work with the internet? Can it work with the internet? It almost speaks back to what I was talking about previously with politicians not necessarily understanding tech. Mm. You know, a lot of our copyright and trademark laws in every sort of developed Western territory date back to a time of books, essentially. Mm. Mm. Is it possible to protect an idea in that sense on the internet?
Mm. It's an interesting concept. I mean, if you look at people like Aaron Schwartz, obviously, who unfortunately passed away, he was a big, pioneer in terms of trying to open up information and had a really strong belief that knowledge should, you know, the internet has a power to make knowledge accessible to all. But then equally, you can see that if you're a photographer, you want to be fairly remunerated for your work. I don't think we've reconciled those two positions yet.
Well, it is difficult because we find this often on the consumer side here at IDG, that PC Advisor and Macworld UK, which have huge audiences, the content we produce there will appear on other sites. And recently we had a thing where an Amazon power reviewer was basically passing off PC Advisor reviews as their own in order to get free gifts from Amazon.
Mm,
and of course we're a big media company, so we will defend ourselves, and we've got lawyers, or we can at least pretend we've got lawyers and write letters. Scary letters.
Don't give that away.
And no one's listening by now, it's fine. And that's fine, but then there does come a point where it's kind of like, well, how much is it hurting us, really? Mm. And, you know, how enforceable are these rules?
Yeah.
I just don't know.
No, I mean, I was listening to the head of digital strategy at Times, or News UK even, the other day, and he was saying now, basically, getting an exclusive for newspapers is irrelevant.
Yeah.
They still want to be first, but it doesn't do anything for them, because within 5 minutes, someone else will have copied it or said as reported in the Times. Within about 20 minutes, it would be all over anyone that's going to cover it. And within about 50 minutes, you would have a piece by BuzzFeed or Mashable saying, oh my God, look at the reactions to this piece the Times have just written.
Yeah.
So this the news cycle, and then within 24 hours, it's out of the news cycle. So these things have all like collapsed down, and you get a lot shorter window. Mm. And people expect things for free.
Yeah, I think the genie is kind of out of the bottle to
repeat that phrase. Well, there's a really interesting piece on the FT recently, speaking of things that aren't free. Where it was essentially a critique of other publications and saying that the newspaper model in the UK is kind of screwed because attempting to be everything to all people is just not how it works now. And we know that ourselves. We have six different titles that cover six very different niches of people who are interested in technology, from consumers down to up to C-level professionals. And what we've learned ourselves, I guess, is that you've got to be unique to succeed. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes me think that this whole idea of the Fine Brothers franchising was always kind of doomed to fail anyway, because the thing that's made them successful, if anything's made them successful, is presumably the people in the videos and the editorial quality of the videos. So someone else could try and copy that illegitimately and may or may not succeed with it, succeed on their own terms. And someone could buy the franchise and may or may not succeed, but would succeed on their own terms. Mm.
But on a moral level, I mean, I'm very conflicted about this as well. Mm. But I just think if somebody had a genuinely original idea, which reaction videos are not, but, you know, somebody comes up with something and then they do it well, and then somebody else copies the idea and does it better, and then displaces them and gets all the money. Yeah. Part of me is thinking, well, that's not but they're doing, totally it's they're
doing
fair.
It, it's the doing it better bit, though, isn't it?
Mm, but it's a combination it better, of two
you're,
things.
You're adding something to it.
You are adding something.
Yeah, there aren't any really original ideas anymore, so you've got to do it better. Yeah,
that's so cynical. There must be
some. Yeah,
cynical. If so, but maybe the reason there are no new ideas is because you can't make any money out of ideas anymore. All you can make money out of is rehashing old
ideas. Yeah, I think
ideas.
That's a really good point.
And that's the original purpose of copyright, is to encourage innovation.
But then I would say our experience, speaking about Macworld UK, our experience has been that at one point we did used to attempt to cover everything about Apple for, you know, the magazine reader, if you like. And that online, that didn't succeed. But what succeeds extremely well is creating information that people can't get anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, so in a sense, the market or the internet kind of polices itself in a way. Mm. Don't get me wrong, I completely take the point you're saying. I'm not quite as didactic about this as I may be coming across. But I do think there is an element by which originality, at least, is recognisably originality on the internet. For instance, you know, in the old days, someone could come along and steal your idea and put it in a newspaper, and if you didn't have access to a newspaper, you would never be able to prove that they'd stolen your idea. Mm. Whereas at least now on the internet, we have date stamps.
For anyone playing UK Tech Weekly word bingo out there, genie in the bottle three times,
three
didactic
times.
Once.
Yeah.
Twice now.
Impressive. Yeah, I know.
Which may be time to bring this harlequinade to a halt. Thanks for sticking with us this far. It was our first time, and you're a wonderfully patient audience, Mum. So do get in touch to let us know any of your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. We will be back next week, whether you like it or not. And you can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idguk, put podcast in the subject line. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.